Okay, and this is the hour we will take your phone calls. Don Dundary, our special guest, as we talk about his work, UFOs, ETs, and alien abductions. And you're next with him on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Don Dundary and your phone calls as well. Don, as you look at this entire episode of UFOs, the history of, and everything else, your biggest conclusion is this is a surveillance program. But how long are they going to survey?
Good question, and I don't know. There are a couple of things that seem to be coming together, and this is interesting, and I was thinking about it during the break. I've mentioned several people in the last couple of hours, Stanton Friedman, Leslie Keene, at the Barney and Betty Hill. David Jacobs, I also know half a dozen people. Most of them have PhDs or MDs or Master of Science degrees, technically trained, competent people in a lot of fields who are interested in, basically, who all think UFOs are extraterrestrial. Other scientists have been finding planets on distant stars that can at least provide a habitat for people like us daily. There are more people studying UFOs, humans studying UFOs. There are more places UFOs might come from, and I think slowly but surely, more people are being persuaded by the evidence that the UFOs are extraterrestrial and they probably come from one of these other places. So how long it's been going on, I don't know. The obvious evidence, the clear evidence, say from 1947 or thereabouts on, the unclear evidence from a lot earlier, and when it will end and in what way, absolutely unknowable at this point. In the end of my book, I cite a British historian who wrote during the interim between the First and Second World Wars, who said something, and I'm not going to bore anyone with a long quote, that it's almost impossible to predict the ebb and flow of human history. There's been progress, but it comes in waves, and new events come in waves and overwhelm the progress, can overwhelm the progress that we've had. So it's unpredictable, and we don't know, and it's almost impossible even for a historian to predict.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Ray and go ahead. You're not finished yet.
No, go ahead. It's fine.
You sure? Okay.
Absolutely.
Ray in Niles, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Ray.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm doing well.
Okay, I'd like to, I'm very sympathetic to your guest position. I take the UFO position seriously. And I'd like to make a couple comments, one about my criticism of debunkers, to see if he agrees with it. And I have a very simplified UFO argument. And when you think about it, it really turns out to be quite simple, and you don't get into complicated matters. First, the debunkers. I noticed that a lot of debunkers argue what is called a straw man. And there are two versions of the straw man argument. It comes in two flavors. One is when you attribute a position to someone that they don't hold and attack that invented version of the position. And the other is when you attack the weakest arguments for a position and leave the strongest arguments unaddressed. I noticed people like Seth Shostak, for example, do the latter. And what I mean by that specifically is this. They'll always talk about those distant, strange lights in the sky, we know not what, and then talk about how we can easily mistake them for conventional objects, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, that's true. The margin of error is wide. But all you have to do is dismiss that entire category and concentrate on the close encounter cases. There's tens of thousands of close encounter cases where the object is literally in the witness's face, and you can't play the error card in those. In the Rendlesham case in the Keane book, for example, Sergeant Pendleton goes up to the object, it lands in the forest, and he touches it. And then it takes off at a fantastic speed right in front of him. Now, there's only three possible explanations for that. Either Peniston is lying and all of the military persons in his presence who observed it with him are lying, or two, they all hallucinated, or three, the event is real. Well, the first two suggestions are preposterous, and that only leaves the third possibility, and I can't understand why some people aren't intelligent enough to see that if they take the first two explanations seriously, that on rational belief grounds, their position's not rational because the probability that they're right is near zero. The second thing I'd like to say is what I call the motion argument. Pilot, let's say that a operator of the radar operator gets an anomalous return on his radar scope, okay? And a jet is set up, scrambled and set up to investigate it. All the pilot has to do is answer two simple questions. If he confronts an object in the sky, he has to answer two simple questions that are easy to answer. One, is the object I'm confronting under intelligent control, yes or no? And two, is the object executing maneuvers that our own aircraft can perform, yes or no?
Well, and three, is it hostile?
But still, if the first two are true, okay, then somebody's in our airspace who's not us with hardware that's not ours. Now, that's very easy to determine, yet people quibble about it, and I can't understand why supposedly intelligent men, who most of these debunkers are, simply don't understand or can't see that. I mean, if I can see a simple argument like that, they ought to be able to see it too, because all you have to do is answer those two simple questions. Clearly, an object is under intelligent control if it takes evasive action when you pursue it or it pursues you. And it's also executing maneuvers you can't duplicate if it does one of four things: high-speed vertical climb, or two, sharp right-angle turns at high velocity, or three, goes in a linear trajectory forward at high rate of speed, stops instantaneously, and reverses course 180 degrees backwards like it's bouncing off a wall. Or what Kenju Terauchi observed, who was flying that plane over Alaska, that the object was making jumping maneuvers around his plane as he was flying forward. This object, which was twice the size of an aircraft carrier and shaped like a walnut, was about 6 to 8 miles at his 11 o'clock position, then instantaneously jumped to a 6 o'clock position, then his 3 o'clock position, then his 9 o'clock position, is making jumping maneuvers around his craft as it moves forward. I would think that any scientist who can be called rational could see that the only plausible explanation of that is that we're dealing with craft of some sort that belonged to somebody. Now, even if you reject the alien hypothesis, clearly that the craft exists. And that's a separate argument, and I don't understand why they reject such.
All right, let's get the Don's reaction to all of that. Don?
Well, first of all, your caller is extremely well-informed on the subject.
Yes,
you could
is.
Probably have him giving you an hour and a half lecture on it, and he wouldn't miss a thing and probably knows as much or more about it than I do. But the answer as to why they don't pay attention, and your caller, by the way, is also versed in rhetoric, and I appreciate that, the answer is probably what I described earlier as cognitive dissonance. People who are strongly invested in science, and I'm putting that in quotes as we know it, are people who, and I use the word believe in quotes also, believe in progress according to the scientific method. The scientific method these days, not always, but these days, is basically entirely driven by theory. If you have a theory, you can investigate it. You can try and extend it a little further. If you don't agree with the theory, you propose another theory that either modifies or replaces the first theory, and then you do experiments or collect observations to support your theory and discredit the old one. This approach to science has been known since about 1962, when a very famous and deservedly well-known book called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions was written by a man named Thomas Kuhn. Kuhn's suggestion is that all scientists work within these limits. They either have to have a theory or they have to have a counter theory. And to paraphrase a quote from Kuhn, if a person doesn't work within a paradigm or have a counter paradigm or theory, then that person is not practicing science. So if you're strongly wedded to science and all of this anomalous data are coming in that you can't assimilate into a theory or another competitive theory, the only thing you can do to save your emotional stability and your love of science is to reject that other evidence, regardless of whether it's a rational rejection or not. So your caller correctly suggests you either attack the weakest point, which is a straw man, or you attack some argument that wasn't made. Either you attack an argument that wasn't made, the straw man, or you attack the weakest argument, which your person you're attacking has already dismissed, and your caller was right on both points.
You were talking about the Barney and Betty Hill case, but you also have several other abduction cases in your book. Could you share another with us, Don?
I'd be happy to. In fact, there are five other cases. The best known is one, again, that was written up by my late colleague, Bud Hopkins. It was called, what was the title? Witnessed. The book was called Witness, about the Brooklyn Bridge abductions. This happened in 1989 in New York City. The case is complicated, but I'm going to simplify it for purposes of describing it. A woman living on a upper floor in a apartment, residential apartment tower near the Brooklyn Bridge, was in fact abducted by gray aliens who levitated her through a metal child guard on her window up a beam of light into a hovering UFO. The entire abduction was seen from outside by at least one witness who was crossing the Brooklyn Bridge at the time within clear view of the top of this building, possibly other witnesses who didn't report it because all the traffic on the bridge was slowed, car headlights dimmed because of some distant effect of the UFO. It was also seen, as Bud's book makes very clear, by two U.S. security guards who were escorting a very famous person, a very important international political personage, from what in fact was the UN headquarters in Midtown, down the FDR Drive onto the streets on the ground when the FDR Drive became elevated, and to a heliport out on Governor's Island. They witnessed it, the VIP witnessed it, the security guards witnessed it, the people on the bridge witnessed it, and the woman who was abducted recalled this under hypnosis after having experienced missing time. All of those events, a multiple witness abduction, close encounter of the third kind, were thoroughly researched by Bud, independently supported by the other witnesses. A very complicated and emotionally difficult situation arose between the abductee and the security guards who saw the abduction. The case was thoroughly documented, and I'm in the documentation, and here's why, and it's rather amusing. I was visiting Bud in 92 before the book came out, and at that time, I met the person who was abducted, the person described in the book as Linda Cortilli. Bud was doing a hypnosis session with Linda. I had traveled down from Montreal to visit, was a bit sleepy. I sat at the foot of the couch on which Linda was being hypnotized. Bud sat at the head in a chair. He started to induce hypnosis, and that's a rather sleep-producing process. And I started to doze while this was going on. I report this in my book, and he mentions the fact I was there in his book. And about maybe a minute or so into the hypnotic induction process, Linda describes seeing some grays coming out behind a curtain, and then she shrieks incredibly loudly, and I wake up instantly, or come out of my doze instantly, and am restored to full consciousness by the fact that she was totally emotionally wrought up by what she was recalling having happened. So I know Linda Cortilli, so-called. I obviously know Bud. I was a part of this hypnosis experience. I understand the documentation behind it. I've seen some of the original transcripts, and the account is very compelling. And in fact, it's on my list of recommended readings for people who want to know what the current situation in the UFO world is.
All right, very good. Next up, we go to Thea in Hemet, California. Hello, Thea. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Thea.
I was born in 1947, and I was the only left-hander in my family. And I was wondering if the increase of left-handers is because they have an alien DNA.
Well, can I answer that?
Yeah.
First of all, it's nice to talk to someone my own age. hello, Thea.
Hi.
Secondly, I haven't a clue. I have no knowledge about that whatsoever. I don't know and couldn't possibly give you an informed opinion on it. It's an interesting speculation, but it's certainly beyond what I know.
Where do we go next with the UFO studies? What happens?
Very good question. As I said, there are now, it seems, a lot of us doing the studying, which is, if not a change, at least a public change in that people like me are willing to be identified. Leslie Keene, David Jacobs, the late Bud Hopkins, other people whose names are in the public or could be in the public domain about this and who you see occasionally at conferences. A colleague and friend, Richard Haynes, Ron Westrom, all of these PhD scientists of one kind or another.
I think what's happening, in a way, you don't really need more information to persuade people that some of what people report as UFOs are extraterrestrial. That's because the information is there. I reported it in this book. Many other people have reported it in other good books. So the literature is out there. The public commentary, like this one tonight, is out there. People we've talked about have been on your program, have appeared at public meetings and symposia. It's a question of just overcoming a kind of belief threshold that takes this out of what we all know into what we all accept. I think there's still a barrier between knowing this, at least the public knowing it, and what you might call the entire society accepting it. But we're breaching that barrier gradually. And I'm not sure if I had $1 million to grant, where I'd put it in the study of UFOs. I just plain don't know.
Do you think at Area 51 that they indeed have crashed UFOs?
Well, here's where I can go with that. And again, it's unattributed, and it's a friend's comment. The friend said he knew somebody in the defense business who had his hand on a UFO in Area 51. But that is the kind of information that tells you nothing, because it's secondhand from a reliable source, in my opinion, but a secondhand story about what somebody else experienced in another place some time ago is not corroborating information, because it can't be verified. So there's rumor for sure, and the rumor about Area 51 abounds. It's everywhere. But fact has escaped me so far. I've got no corroborating evidence. And here's where all of your callers will be interested in perhaps what you or what one of your guests think. But there's very little beyond what we've already talked about that I can tell them. And that's the dividing line between speculation and collecting the evidence. And I wouldn't go so far. I'm a scientist. It's true. And I still publish research. I would say the book I wrote is scientific journalism. It's putting in clear words what scientists know or what respectable researchers know. And it adds a little speculation here and there, but most of what I report is, or I interpret as fact, and I'm willing to stand on those as facts. I can't stand on what's going on in Area 51 because I just don't know.
With the research that you've done, what has been for you the most baffling?
Two things. First, the appearance of these gigantic machines, ones that I'm sure you've heard about over Stephenville, Texas in 2008, over the Taconic Parkway in 86, over Belgium in 89. Not just the little two-seaters that we talked about. They're kind of fun. They have basically entered the public consciousness through New Yorker cartoons and the like.
And Phoenix would be considered one of those too, right?
Oh, one of
the Phoenix,
giant ones.
It's in
Phoenix
97.
Light, for sure, yeah. Absolutely. That's right. It's not quite as well documented as the Stephenville sightings, but you're absolutely right. That's included. The other thing is, of course, the abduction experience itself. The fact that we're in the presence of what, for the most part, appear to be humanoid creatures, that is, head, two arms, two legs, whatever they look like, who are technically cleverer than we are. That's all I'm going to say. They may not be nicer. They may not be smarter in other ways, but they certainly can make machines that we can't make. And that's
right.
A bit of a worry. You're absolutely right.
Stay with us, Don. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls with him. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be right back. On our next Coast to Coast program, Robert Peterson joins me as we talk about out-of-body experiences. So get ready for that. And when we come back in a moment with our guest, Professor Don Dondarri, we will take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Don Dondarri with us, Professor Don Dondarri. Do you miss teaching anymore?
I do, actually. I like teaching. I've never disliked standing up and talking, which is, I suppose, a necessary thing you had to have to do it. But, I enjoy teaching. I always have. I give the occasional lecture, which is great. And so that's been fun. Also, McGill, after I retired, gave me the opportunity, invited me to give 4 lectures on UFOs and abductions, which is rare for a university and very much appreciated. Yep. So, yes, I do enjoy it. I miss it, and I've got a lot of other things to do, but I do like teaching and certainly did like it for my entire career of it.
Don, we've had reports of, small planes, boats, simply vanishing. simply disappearing. And in some cases, the occupants of the planes or the boats have reported seeing objects coming at them. If that's true, to me that sounds something like kidnapping, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah. And that's not good. I don't think kidnapping should be tolerated. It happens, obviously. The abduction phenomenon is kidnapping. And I argue that we should be able to do something to prevent it. It's a little touchy because, as you rightly pointed out before in commenting on what I've said, and I said the same thing, we don't want to start a war with anybody we can't beat, for sure.
Yeah.
And this is a bit of a tricky situation. It's not a comfortable one. You're quite right.
Let's go to Patrick in Moore, Oklahoma. Hey, Patrick, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Pat.
Oh, how you doing, George?
Good, good.
I just want to call. I was in the military between 2005 and 2009.
All right, and thanks for serving, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. And I have two photographs of a UFO. Same location, but from two different people. One of them is through night vision, and the other one is just through a regular lens. But the one that's just regular lens, it looks like it's breaking the sound barrier, but it's still, it's just hovering. And the one through the night vision, it looks like a V-shaped gas, and it just hovered over the platoon for maybe 15 minutes, and then we kept going. But I just wanted to share that and see how I can get these pictures to y'all.
Wow, would you email them to me? Can you do that? Or do you have to mail it?
I can email.
Okay, it's george@coast2coastam.com.
Okay.
George, can I ask your caller to supply the whatever information he can that gives the location, time, and place and stuff like that?
Sure.
Yes, the night vision picture, it has on the picture the date, the time, and everything. I really don't want to give out the location. Is that fine?
Yeah, I understand why. Sure.
Okay. And I have another thing, if you'll let me. When I was actually in Afghanistan, and we saw some orbs circling around, and there was about 20 of them, and my entire platoon saw them, but my platoon commander and platoon sergeant, they shut us down and said they're just flares. But as combat vets, we know the difference in a flare and something else. So I just want to share that stuff, that things are going on over there. And I don't know if they're observing the war or what's going on, but it's pretty interesting.
All right, Patrick, make sure you email it to me, okay?
Okay, thank you, George.
And great. Thanks for telling us that.
George at coasttocoastam.com will be looking for that. You know, the ancient India scripts talk about Vamanas, flying machines. Is it possible they're still out there in the region, Don?
I suppose so. Again, here's where it gets, from the human point of view, it gets interesting. You look for biblical references, one of which I mentioned earlier. I'm sure there are references in medieval documents to, I know there are because I can't recall the citation, orbs flying over various cities, including, I think, Baal in Switzerland. And then there are, as you say, references to things like that in other literatures that should be traced down as a part of what you might call UFO scholarship. I'm not an omnivore when it comes to knowing these things, but they're certainly in somebody else's province and should be looked into for sure.
Let's go to Paul in Dalt, California. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, my unmute are opposite. Okay, you just said something about the Bible. I'm not going to get all into that, but remember, Jesus says to some people that there are those among us that will never taste of death till the, like, you know, the Lord comes and stuff. So there I get where, you know, you have the fallen angels and all. Wouldn't that make us the aliens? And you talk about the dark-eyed people, the black-eyed children and the black-eyed adults, I guess, that is really super creepy. Have you ever heard of, when you talk about the reptilians, I tell you, I've seen this. Nobody's going to believe me in a million years. Have you ever seen the white-eyed people that have a film go up like reptiles up over their, under their eyelids?
I have not, Don.
No, neither have I. That's the new one to me.
It's the scariest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, and it's there. It's something I'd had people tell me 20 years ago. It's in the eyes. It's in the eyes. And it was like a group of people that wanted me to sign an anti-disclosure statement. And I just put my hands over my ears and I said, la, la, la. Didn't want to know. I didn't want to know. And it was somewhat recently. I won't say where I was. I looked over. Someone was looking at me. I looked back and around, and someone that I knew had, they just seemed to be wherever I was at the certain place. And about 3 or 4 of them, the ones that I dared to glance at, stared straight on at me with white film over their eyes as if like lizards or birds, you know?
I've never heard of that.
Well, neither have I. That's an interesting experience, and I really don't have much to say about it.
All right. Thank you for that, Paul. Let's go to Chad in Roanoke, Virginia. Hello, Chad. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How y'all doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. I just called in because, you know, it's a nice topic, UFOs. I was listening to your show on my cell phone, and I'm out here smoking a cigarette, and I happened to see a UFO while I was out here.
What happened?
Well, I was looking up the sky. I saw a shooting star, and I see it fairly often. I'm in the mountains, so the sky is pretty clear.
Okay.
And so I was looking up the sky, and all of a sudden, this light turns on in the sky. I'm thinking it's an airplane turning around. And then 3 lights appear, and it's like a triangle. And then this thing starts moving, and as it gets closer, I'm underneath of it. I can see the outline of a triangle. And I've seen a stealth bomber fly over. I've seen other military craft. This was different. And it was traveling at an extremely slow pace. And I've seen things in the sky before, but this was the first I've seen of that.
Well, there's these cases are everywhere. Thanks for that, by the way.
Yeah, you're very fortunate to have seen that. And it's an interesting account. Thank you.
Have you ever seen anything that you could call extraterrestrial or UFOs?
Actually, I've been asked that before, obviously. I have seen two of what are called, actually, I've seen one and my wife has seen one, what are called nocturnal lights. And these are less detailed than your caller has just explained. I have seen in the sky something bouncing along with a kind of falling leaf motion at a great distance, obviously, because all I was seeing was a speck of light. And it lasted a few seconds as it went from maybe the southern to the southeastern horizon from my back porch in Montreal. And that's the only thing I've ever seen that was an anomalous visual observation. But if that's all anyone had seen, we wouldn't be here discussing this, because the evidence, if you like, was so weak and so easily confused with a planet, a satellite or a space station, which you can often see orbiting, that it wouldn't really matter that I'd seen that. And it doesn't stand very high on the list of important observations.
Rick in Springfield, Illinois, it's your turn, Rick. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi George, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Great show tonight. Don, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I was wondering, do you know, and this has been a long time ago when I read this, is Betty Andreessen the same person as Betty Hill?
No, goodness no. They're separate people altogether. There are two completely different stories. Both are abduction stories, but they're not the same
person. Great stories.
Yeah, right. And have you ever read anything about Betty Andreessen?
Indeed I have, yeah.
Yeah, supposedly she had been abducted many times.
That's true.
And, since she was a child. And the other thing, back in the 90s, the psychiatrist, he was in the psychiatry department at Harvard, the late Dr. John Mack, wrote a book called Abducted that he had put many people from all over the world under hypnosis. And basically, they all told the same story Are you familiar with him?
I am. I knew him when he was alive, and I also know that somebody spoofed him once, which was rather embarrassing. One of the local journals, I can't recall which one, put a person into, had him contact John Mack, and the person was a fake abductee, but was passed as a real one. Oh, that was an embarrassment, but it didn't mean that a lot of the other things that were in John's book and that he'd written about weren't true.
It was a setup, wasn't it?
A setup, exactly.
Cody in Pensacola, Florida. Good morning, Cody. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was just calling to see if the professor had any opinions on Dr. Greer and, the serious disclosure. It's not hit the media worldwide yet, but it actually premiered on Earth Day. Talking about, limitless energy and extraterrestrials are here and being covered up by government officials and many different officials coming forward and the banks and all, so on and so forth. What do you think about that?
Well, as I said earlier, I know about the Roswell cover-up, and that's been well documented. I don't have any current information about anything else, although you're quite right. People who were asked to keep quiet about things like the Alaska sighting that somebody else mentioned, as a matter of fact, was a caller, have not kept quiet about it. And so a lot of UFO information that various officials would like to see kept quiet has not been kept quiet because people won't do it. That's changed. I agree.
That's changed dramatically. And, of course, Stephen Greer has his new film out, Sirius, and it's a great, great program. He's done a good job with the documentary.
I can't comment on it. I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, and they're still waiting for the DNA. He's got a little 6-inch creature that looks human with an elongated head, and they're still doing DNA, and they don't know what it is.
Right. I've read that much about it, but I haven't seen the film.
But they do say it lived 6 to 8 years, whatever it was. So very strange.
Yeah, very strange.
Let's go to Bob, truck driving in Ohio. Bob, you're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I'm trucking up here across the Indiana toll road up here. The other day, I seen the same thing with three triangle lights, like the caller just a few minutes ago.
They're everywhere. It's very possible that these are government planes or drones. That's another possibility, Don.
There's a possibility that I don't know if you've I don't know about your sighting. It's interesting that two people call on the same night with the same thing. There is a very fast, very high reconnaissance airplane that the U.S. has built, the Aurora program. It's still pretty secret, and it occasionally flies over and can be seen. I haven't, but I've been told that's true. Otherwise, I don't know. You're quite right. There are certainly secret projects in the works that we know nothing about, and they're reasonably kept secret because if you're trying to defend the country, you don't give away all your defense secrets. I have no quarrel with that. And it sometimes might be confusing about what people are seeing. I agree. It's interesting you saw a similar triangular set of lights on the same night that somebody else just called in and said he saw the same thing.
Let's go to Terry in Loon Lake, Washington, first-time caller. Hello, Terry. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I am from Loon Lake, but I promise I'm not a loony.
I will accept that.
We have loonies in Canada, so I'm glad you're not one.
I've never seen a UFO myself, but I saw the Phoenix Lights on TV and saw the governor talk about having seen them too. And it seems to me that it's time for us to move politically and demand that our government come clean about this. I mean, I don't mean to be funny with this, but might it not be the job of the Foreign Relations Committee?
I say the same thing in the book, basically. I agree with you about let's come clean. Let's find out a little more about what's going on and not keep the observation secret. I'm 100% with you there.
Well, I don't know if we'll ever get there, though. What do you think? We should, but I'm not sure governments will help us. I don't think...
I think they'll be pushed, George. I think they'll be pushed. And I think we're pushing, basically.
Let's go to Yuba City, California. Hello, Heather. Go ahead.
Hi. It's so great to talk to you. I'm super excited.
Glad you got in.
I have stumbled upon some YouTube videos that people are channeling these angels. They call themselves the Galactic Federation of Light. Have you heard of them?
Yep, we sure have.
I have not. Okay. So one of us has, one of us hasn't.
Well, they talk about the Greys and the all the other aliens that I've been hearing about lately. And the thing is that they talk about this big disclosure project and how huge this is getting, Manifest Destiny, trying to teach you how to ascend into other dimensions. And sometimes I feel very enlightened, other times very depressed. And the thing that gets me is when I'm listening to it, I will ask a question in my head and they'll answer it, right, the next thing they say. So I want to know if this is like a David Copperfield, pick a number and everybody in America gets the same number type thing. And if it's so huge, how come there's only like 1,000 hits on each one of these YouTube videos?
Well, a lot of people might not know where it is and how to find it, and that's part of the problem with that. But, you know, a lot of people think the Galactic Federation is indeed part and is out there. Who knows? It could be like Star Trek. We just never know. Don, we're rapidly running out of time. We've got about a minute left. I'd like for you to once again, give us your book. You do not have a website. Is that correct?
I do have a website. It's called UFOETS.com.
Very good. How long have you had that up?
It's actually in the works. Most of it's up, and it will be improved in the next couple of days.
Okay. That's what our staff was telling me. That wasn't quite ready yet, but almost soon. Okay.
Right.
Very good. And the book, of course, available all over the place, huh?
That is right.
All right, Don, good luck in your work and your research. It's nice that a scientist would be involved in the search for this extraterrestrial life, and it's pretty gutsy on your part. And personally, your family, do they endorse what you do?
They're very content with it, completely content with it.
Very good. Get some sleep. I know it's in the wee hours in Montreal.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Don Dondarri, of course, he's a professor, retired. His book, UFOs, ETs, and Alien Abductions. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.